Welcome to Music from the Tower, highlighting the beauty of sacred and classical music. We come to you from the Tower of Hope on the magnificent campus of Christ Cathedral in Garden Grove, California. Now, here's your host, John Romeri.
And this is your host, John Romeri, and we welcome you to Music from the Tower, coming to you from the beautiful campus of Christ Cathedral. Today's guest is the most eminent organist in the planet, Fred Swan. Fred, I am so excited about having you here with me. Welcome to Music from the Tower.
Well, thank you, John, but I question your description.
I have more descriptions here. Listen to this. In 2008, the AGO had a big gala honoring him at First Congregational, and he was named the Crown Prince of the King of Instruments. Who gets that title? The Crown Prince of the King of Instruments. Another reviewer says, Fred has presided over more ranks and more pipes and more stop lists than any other organist in history. More pipes, more ranks, more stop lists. It's because you've played the great Crystal Cathedral organ, you've played First Congregational, you played Riverside Church. We're going to talk about all of those places and the rest of your wonderful career on this program. Fred, it's just an honor to have you, and I'm so excited to have this story on our show. It's just wonderful.
Thank you, John.
So let's start at the beginning, shall we?
Okay.
You were born in West Virginia. You quickly moved on to Virginia. Your father was a Methodist bishop. Tell us a little bit about what it was like growing up in that household. Were they musical?
Well, I had one brother who was a little bit musical. There were six children, three boys, three girls, but one brother was the only one that had any musical interest or ability.
Wow, just one. And he played the organ as well, right?
Just a little bit. He became a chaplain in the Army and did not make it through the war. But
So were your parents excited or upset that you were going to become an organist?
I think my father was really not happy about it at all. He had really wanted me to go into the ministry. And I was 30 years old and in a prominent position before I convinced him that music was also a ministry, and that I could do really as much for some people from an organ console and choir loft as from a pulpit.
As you have, my friend. So tell us about how you came to discover the organ for the very first time.
Well, I was studying piano. I was about age six, I guess, taking piano lessons from the organs of the church. And one day I got there early, and I couldn't find her, but I heard the organ playing. So I went upstairs and around the corner, and here was the organ console with things popping in and out and lights flashing. And thought, oh, goody, I can't wait to get hold of that. But my legs were much too short. But after a couple of years, she bribed me. If I had a good piano lesson, she'd let me play the organ. She'd teach me about it a little bit.
Oh, is that great?
And then, unfortunately and sadly, she died when I was 10 years old, and there was somebody else to play, so I became the church organist at age 10.
At age 10. Well, no wonder you've had such a long career, my friend.
Yeah, I never stopped. I was a very lucky kid. I never had to decide what I was going to do with my life when I grew up, because it just kept happening, going from job to job.
And I felt the same. You know, I had a church job in high school, and I just kind of knew what I was after, you know, and what I was going to do. And here I am at 400 years old still doing it, you know. But it's just so exciting. This reviewer says, you're the most famous organist in the world. And no one else comes close, the reviewer goes on to say.
Well, that depends what century and what decade.
I don't think so, my friend. You played for 20 million people each and every Sunday here at the Crystal Cathedral over the airwaves into 165 countries. Mm. That's pretty famous, you know. The rest of us play for a little congregation sitting there in the pews, but you played for the whole world.
Well, I would never realize it until more than once in a sidewalk cafe in Paris or some restaurant in Germany, somebody would come up and say, aren't you the organist of the Crystal Cathedral? We watch there every week.
Isn't that great?
So that sort of brought it home to me.
Well, I think so. I mean, just coming here, I had about over 1,000 requests on Facebook friends in my very first couple weeks, because everybody knew, nobody knew who John Romeri was, but everybody knew I was the music director at the Crystal Cathedral, now Christ Cathedral. So, you know, it's true. This organ brings us to life. So then you studied through high school?
Studied through high school, went to college. at Northwestern.
And with whom did you study there?
Studied with Thomas Matthews, who is well known in organist circles. He's now deceased. Fine composer, wonderful improviser, and a great teacher.
Well, he's the one that wrote that beautiful The
Lord is My Shepherd.
And I was glad when they said, right. You know, so many beautiful pieces. Yeah.
But going to Northwestern was really, it really is what made my life, because very soon after I got there, I met William H. Barnes. I don't know if you know that name.
I do. He wrote the famous book on the organ.
And he and his wife had recently lost a son. And for some reason or other, I seemed to remind them of the son, and they just sort of adopted me.
Oh, is that great?
And took me into their life and helped me, helped with my schooling. But more than that, one of their best friends was Virgil Fox. So I got to know Virgil Fox when I was, you know, about a sophomore in college. Also, they took me on my first trip to New York, and that's where I met many organists, including Charles Corboyne, who was the organist of St. Patrick's Cathedral at the time. He'd been at the Wanamaker store, but got to know him and played for him, and he seemed impressed so much so for some reason that he gave me free lessons on all the complete works of César Franck, of which he was a master. So there were things like that that I've been so fortunate, or the Southern Methodists would say, I've been very blessed all through my life to have something like that happen. But it all goes back to Northwestern and Barnes and Fox and Corboyne and so forth.
Well, and I think that everybody listening, you know, all of us organists, could have a similar story, perhaps not with such famous people, but someone has touched us and given us that next step.
Right.
I feel incredibly blessed in my own career of the great people I've known, including you, my friend. So now we're at Northwestern and then on to Union Seminary, yes?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so you made your way to New York to do your master's?
Yes, at Union.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. And with whom did you study there?
Studied with Hugh Porter at the beginning, and then eventually also with Carl Weinrich. And, of course, Union Seminary was right across the street from Riverside Church, where Virgil Fox was the organist, and I already knew him, and he was frequently away on concert tours, so very soon I became the substitute organist there for him. And then,
Were you still at Union at that time?
Yes.
So still a student.
But I substituted for him, and at the same time, Clarence Dickinson, the famous name.
Yes, of course.
At the Brick Presbyterian Church, had a heart attack, and I went there to be organist and director for a year and a half. And I was also, at the same time, Harold Friedel's assistant at St. Bartholomew's Church. So sometimes I would somehow or other get all three in on a Sunday. But it was so fortunate. I mean, I was in New York at a wonderful time. The great musicians.
The peak of the peak, really. Yeah. You know, when you think of Union Seminary at that time, it really was my teacher all through undergrad. Primed and got me ready to go to Union Seminary. That's all he talked about. Every student he'd ever had went to Union Seminary. His name was Charles Schilling.
I knew Charles. Yeah.
Well, he was a wonderful, wonderful teacher. Again, I was so blessed. So I get there along with my roommate, who was another organist, and the school closes.
Oh, no, at that time.
At the time under Robert Baker when it closed. And we were adopted by Westminster Choir College, and that's how I ended up at Westminster. But we had spent all those years priming to go to Union. Because
it was a wonderful experience. I'm sorry you didn't get to have
that. That was the school. But nonetheless, Westminster was amazing, and I was still in the New York area. I studied with John Weaver, as you know.
Unfortunately.
Some lessons were right at Madison Avenue, some were in the choir college. And, you know, so we were in and out of New York all the time. We went to Evensong at St. John the Divine every single Sunday.
Absolutely.
And scooted up to Riverside. Those were great days in New York.
They were wonderful days.
All those people. And the advantage of being in New York, I've always encouraged my own students to go there because there's so much to see and so much to hear. During my time living in Philadelphia, I was on the train every 5 minutes, you know, to go hear something or go see something or somebody was playing something that I just had to go hear. And I'm enjoying doing that now in Southern California. Well, Fred Swan plays all over the place, and he's still playing all over the place, almost 3,000 recitals.
Not so much.
Well, pretty much all over the place. He just played a beautiful recital for us here at the 20th anniversary of the Fred Swan organ right here on our campus in our Arboretum. And it was with our local AGO, and it was a wonderful, beautiful event. And it was your third recital that week on two coasts. So don't give me this. I'm not doing quite as much. But over 3,000 recitals dedicating 600 organs plus, right?
Probably, yeah.
Amazing. You're going to hear from us in just a minute here of a piece from the National Shrine. Fred was the one who dedicated that organ. He's dedicated the organ at Disney Hall. He dedicated the organ at Segerstam Center right here in Costa Mesa. So organ after organ. And Symphony Hall, you played in Chicago Symphony Hall.
It was the inaugural recital there. And also Davies Hall.
Davies Hall in San Francisco. It just goes on and on and on.
No, that's as far as it goes.
When you need a recitalist, you call Fred. And so we are waiting for his recital right here at the Crystal Cathedral when we reopen. But in the meantime, we're going to listen to a beautiful piece that he recorded at the National Shrine. Tell us about it, Fred.
This is by Maurice Durfle, the great French organist. It's a fugue on the theme of the Carillon of Soissons Cathedral. And to introduce it, I had Robert Grogan, who is the cathedral carillonneur, played the theme on the carillon bells at the shrine, and then immediately brought in the organ piece on top of it.
Wonderful. And we'll be right back with the Riverside Days and Fred Swan. With music from the tower and the crowned prince of the King of Instruments, Fred Swan. We're going to go to Riverside Church now in New York. You became the organist there in 1952, or at least as a substitute.
I was a substitute then.
For how many years?
Well, really for 5 years, two of which I was in the Army, or almost two years.
So just kind of filling in here.
Filling in there, here and there. And at the same time, was Harold Friedel's assistant at St. Bartholomew's and filling in for Clarence Dickinson at Burke Presbyterian. So it was up and down Park Avenue from one big organ to another.
Oh, is it? See, you presided over more stops and more organs than, well, I'm proud to say we have the Friedel console in the cathedral in St. Louis. That was my parting gift to that lovely cathedral.
Good.
And that organ is preserved now. But you played it as well.
Yes, many times that console.
Magnificent console, isn't it? Well, so what was it like working with Virgil Fox? Everyone wants to know what that was like. I can't imagine it. You know, there's so many Virgil stories and books and The Dish and everything else.
Well, and no matter what you hear, it's true.
It's worse, right?
He was a character personified, as well as being really one of the greatest organists in the world ever.
Ever.
You know,
exactly,
and
right.
In those days, it was the height of the, maybe not competition, that's the right word, but when Biggs was doing one kind of
whole genre of,
and Fox was doing another. And Virgil was playing so many recitals, so I was bought out of the Army early because
wow.
John D. Rockefeller and a few others decided that they no longer wanted Virgil to play.
Oh, wow.
There had been some big blow-up. Anyway, it ended well because he stayed on for 6 years as sort of a co-organist, but he only played half a dozen times a year.
Wow. And he just was concertizing all the time.
And that's when he got into dragging a big electronic organ around with a light show and so forth.
Yes, I saw that show in San Francisco.
Yeah, another whole career.
I was a college kid, and there we were with thousands of kids.
Yeah.
You know, these weren't the normal gray-haired ladies listening to an organ recital on a Sunday afternoon. These were thousands of kids my age at that time in my 20s and early 20s and screaming for the organ and an organist.
Absolutely.
Now, if that didn't do something for the organ, nothing would.
Absolutely.
It was thrilling. And he would play one encore after the other and faster and
right.
and not a wrong note to be seen and just would.
No, he was truly incredible.
He was incredible. I just, I'll never forget that concert as long as I live. But working with him must have been pretty wild. Well, he wasn't the director of the choir, was
no,
he?
No, the director of the choir was Richard Wagley, a wonderful musician. And we worked together for about another 12 or 13 years before he retired, and then I became both choir director and organist. But one person could not possibly have done it in the earlier years, because every Sunday afternoon from October through May, we sang an oratorio, complete oratorio.
Exactly. Well, a half a dozen churches in New York.
Right.
St. Bartholomew's every
right.
Ascension.
It was wonderful, because there weren't concerts in the concert halls in those days, and Lincoln Center hadn't been built. So if you wanted to hear the great oratorios, you came to the church, and these were all very fine choirs, and they worked very hard, three rehearsals a week.
Imagine.
But an oratorio complement and at least a half hour, if not more, of organ music and two or three anthems and half a dozen hymns and chants to be prepared each week, you know. And
so you weren't just sitting around.
No, but I was young. I loved it. And such experience, I mean, really, to learn all those choral works.
Right.
Be exposed to such great music, and working with a fine musician as Richard Wagley was.
So you and Virgil were there on opposing Sundays, not necessarily together?
No, we never played on the same Sunday.
Never at the same Sunday. You stayed there how long? Till 1982.
Yes, through December 31st, 1982. I had already been appointed to the Crystal Cathedral, which we may get to later. But
we certainly will.
I stayed, it was 25 full years.
Wow.
Wonderful time, and of course a great, great organ, and wonderfully musically literate congregation that appreciated everything that was done.
And being in New York and being part of that whole
wonderful
scene.
Wonderful time.
The colleagues there were amazing. So how did Crystal Cathedral come about? We're going to talk a lot more about that in the next segment. But let's hear about how that transition came about.
Well, Virgil was primarily responsible for the design of the Hazelwright organ, but he was ill, and he knew he wasn't going to live even till the organ was built, till the cathedral was finished. So we talked to Robert Schuller and somehow or other convinced him that the only organist who would know what to do with it, because I had followed him on a big organ, was Fred Swan. So I didn't know this at the time.
Well, that just means Virgil was even smarter than we thought.
Well, what happened was then that I didn't know this, but when the organ was put in, they had me play the after the big official dedication, I played the first solo recital.
Solo recital, exactly.
And which was on a Friday night, and they asked me to stay and if I would stay and play church the next Sunday. And I said, sure. So after church, Dr. and Mrs. Schuller met with me and said, we want you to become the new organist of this cathedral. And I laughed, and I said, well, I have this great position in New York. And I said, furthermore, you have a very fine organist who's a friend of mine for many years. This job doesn't exist. And I said, however, I happen to know that you are without a director of music right now. Would you want to talk about that? Oh, no, we only want you to play the organ. I said, well, I would still play the organ, but there would have to be another organist. No, you'd play the organ, nothing else. I said, okay, thank you. Goodbye. Went back to New York, and 4 days later, there was a knock on my office door in the Riverside Tower, and there stood Robert Schuller saying, Arvella and I have come light years in our thinking since we talked to you on Sunday, and please fly out to Garden Grove next week sometime, and we'll talk about a contract and get you signed up. Turned around and left.
And that was it.
Well, an hour later, the phone rang, and it was his secretary saying, I have plane tickets for you next Monday.
Well, he was a very persuasive man.
Oh, very. So I flew out here, but not the least intention of taking the position.
Just to check it out.
And because, I mean, you know, I was very impressed when I played here, the gorgeous building and organ and the people and everything. But I came, and 2 days later, I left having signed the contract. And I only met with Mrs. Schuller and the church controller. They wanted me right away, of course. But
you didn't even meet with Robert Schuller at that visit?
No.
Just Arvella.
No. Arvella, she ran the place at that time, and he trusted her for everything. And she was an organist herself, and she knew what she wanted. And they had a lot of very well-presented contemporary music. But now that they had the building and the organ, they wanted more, quote, real church music. So I came, and it was one of the best things I ever did. The people here were so wonderful, the choir especially.
Well, we're going to hear some of that choir in a little while, and we're going to finish talking about that transition. But how did colleagues take this news?
Oh, they thought I'd sold out because so many of them didn't know anything about the Crystal Cathedral or Schuller, except some of them saw on television, and a lot of it was only contemporary music then. And they were sure that I was selling out to go from this great Gothic cathedral with a great organ to come out here. And for parting gifts from many friends, I got 82 bottles of Windex.
Oh, my gosh.
I said, you're going to have to be cleaning a lot of windows. But they wanted me, so I said, right away, but I couldn't come because there are too many things I had set up in New York for the fall, and I had to sell a house. So we agreed that I would come 1 week a month the first 6 months, which I did,
wow.
Work with the choir and play. And then in January 1, I became full-time, and I mean really full-time. People said, don't you miss New York? I said, New York, I hardly remember. There wasn't time to do anything but get the program going and get it. You know exactly
what it is
to come and get a big program started. And that's
this place is crazy bananas. It's just absolutely
insane. But it's wonderful.
And it's insane still, and in all a wonderful way.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, people envisioned me coming out here on a covered wagon when I came. They thought I was insane. That, you know, you're never going to survive in California with all the contemporary music and all the music of the...
But so much of the East thinks there's nothing past the Mississippi River.
Well, and I must admit, I thought the same. So, you know, but I was bound and determined I was going to turn this place into a great Catholic cathedral.
And you are already.
Trying our best.
Your accomplishments here already have been amazing.
Now we're at the Crystal Cathedral, but before we leave Riverside, we're going to hear a piece called The Bells of Riverside. Tell us about this piece.
This is a piece founded on the theme of the Riverside Carillon.
Beautiful.
The Carillon of Riverside Church is the largest carillon in the world. Carillon's size is determined by the weight. And it's a wonderful, wonderful carillon. And the theme is taken from a theme from Wagner's Parsifal. And Seth Bingham, the composer, a very famous composer and musician in New York in those days, lived just down the street from the church, so he heard these bells all the time. So he wrote this very charming piece called Bells of Riverside. So just as we heard a bell piece from the National Shrine, now we're going to hear a bell piece from the Riverside Church.
And just as an aside, we're going to have a show in just a few weeks all about the carillon here at Christ Cathedral.
Oh,
so,
good.
You'll be hearing more about carillon, so stay tuned. But in the meantime, here's this beautiful piece by Seth Bingham, and we'll be right back with more about Fred Swan and the Crystal Cathedral. Back with one of the most famous organists on the planet, our Fred Swan. Fred is here, and he is telling us all about his early days and his Riverside days. And just in the, at the end of the last segment, we talked about the move to California, the insane move to California. Here he is. Now he's at the Crystal Cathedral. He's on television every week. There are many rules with Arvilla Schuller. All of the things that she wanted, she was an organist. She convinced him to come to California. And here you are now working with the choir as well, not just as organist. So tell us what that was like, this great big choir on TV every Sunday.
Well, it was very rewarding. The choir was a wonderful group of people. I finally got it up to about 115 people. We had almost 800 people in the music department, and I had to be in charge of the whole music department. So gradually, and over the years, I did less and less organ playing and more choral work. But the choir was, they were simply wonderful.
So the main choir was in the morning service, and that was about 115?
Yes, they sang the two morning services.
And who were these other 700 people?
Oh, children's choirs, and there was an evening choir, and we had an oratorio choir. There were various choirs.
Wow.
You may have seen some pictures with choirs spread out clear across the front of the church,
right. Which
was challenging, but a great deal of fun. But theater choir was interesting in that... they had to memorize everything they sang. Mrs. Schuller was very definite about that.
Every piece was memorized.
Everything.
Not just the hymns, everything. Could they have some music?
Well,
in their hand?
The words for the hymns were
on
the screens.
Okay. So
and
get those.
But everything else, once we even did with a volunteer choir a complete performance of Mendelssohn's Elijah from memory.
Oh my gosh.
It was
That's a 2-hour piece.
They were absolutely incredible. They all worked so hard. Out of the, there were really only about 20 people out of the whole choir who really read music.
That's amazing. Amazing.
Others would bring tape recorders to rehearsal and record the rehearsal, and then on the way to and from home, they would play them over and over and memorize, and they really worked so hard. But they were not only my family, I mean, they were a family for themselves, and much loved by the whole church. And the church people were so wonderful and warm that it was really a wonderful move. I was glad that I did it.
Well, those of us here at Christ Cathedral get a taste of that from time to time. Don Noons just had his retirement party right here at the...
Right.
And all sorts of choir members from present and past came to celebrate that. On Memorial Day, we combine and do a joint service between Christ Cathedral and Shepherd Grove.
Good.
And that's fascinating, you know, because they have such a history of these giant Memorial Day services.
Right. Oh, yes.
Giant patriotic things. So
the largest American flag in the world coming from the roof.
It's a thrilling day for us. We kind of end in the cemetery, our own cemetery here on the campus, and 100 doves are released and the carillon plays
right.
And there's guns and, you know, I mean, it's just unbelievable. And it's fun to do that with our friends from Shepherd's Grove, the former Crystal Cathedral.
Well, you mentioned Memorial Gardens, the cemetery here. I'm going to be buried there. I bought a place, way back when I was here. It's in an enclosed building over, sits at an angle. So I got it because it has a wonderful view of the cathedral, so I'm going to be able to watch all these pictures.
Oh, I'm going to have to practice harder now. I had no idea. And, of course, the Schulers are buried there.
They were such great people. They were so wonderful to me, and I loved working with them.
Well, and fortunately, the people running Christ Cathedral are just that wonderful as well.
I sense that, and the ones I know, I completely agree with you.
I am so lucky to have Father Christopher and Chauvin and Monsignor Art Holcomb, all of them have been so kind to me and so supportive. You know, we were talking earlier to them this morning and just about the care they've given the organ and the restoration.
Right.
In a future program, we're going to have a whole program just about the Hazel Wright organ. And so we haven't ignored that and just we'll get to it on a whole. It deserves its own show. But let's talk about the Fred Swan organ. What's that about?
Well, as I said, when the cathedral organ was built, the organ that was in there was just 2 or 3 years old. And by Ruffati, who also put that and the New York organ, they put them all together, moved them in the cathedral. So there was very little organ left in the Arboretum at all, just a small antiphonal division. And we really wanted an organ in there. And
did they still have services in there as well?
Once in a while.
Once in a while.
Everything under the sun happened in there. But there was a big earthquake in 1994, the Northridge earthquake, and the Christian First Church of Christ Scientists in Beverly Hills was almost destroyed in that earthquake, except for the church narthex and the organ chamber.
Isn't that great?
And in the organ chamber sat this wonderful, world-renowned organ, a masterpiece of G. Donald Harrison of the Alien Skinner Company.
1951.
Right. So the church had to sell the organ because the congregation was too small to build a new church and move such a large organ. So we found out about it, and I knew the organist, and we negotiated and negotiated and negotiated. And eventually, we were able to get it. It took some doing, and it got rather hairy near the end because people across the country were hearing about the organ being available and wanting it.
And didn't you go to Dr. Schuller, and he said that you just didn't have the funding?
Just no funding. There was a bad time financially. And Mrs. Schuller said, well, Fred, you're going to have the choir pray for the organ tonight. So the choir prayed for the organ.
Did it work?
It worked. The next morning, the president of the choir was also the head person in the gifts department at Crystal Cathedral. And she called me and said, you won't believe this. We just got a bequest this morning from a woman in Florida who left us the exact amount you need for the organ. And she said, the lawyer said that the woman wanted it used for anything having to do with music, and she was particularly fond of the organ. So, of course, it was just meant to be.
It was perfect.
So the organ ended up costing the church very little money because we had our own technicians who went to Beverly Hills, packed it, moved it down here. We got it restored in various places and got it all put in the Arboretum. And when I resigned and left the church in 1998, Dr. Schuller announced that because I was so instrumental in getting it, they were going to call it the Fred Swan Organ. Not the Fred Swan Memorial Organ.
Oh, okay. We'll leave the memorial out. Well, I'll tell you, as one of the organists of Christ Cathedral, it is one of the great joys
I
have.
It's a beautiful organ.
It's a beautiful organ. As excited as we are for Hazel's return, I love playing that instrument. It's a gorgeous instrument. Absolutely plays services so beautifully.
You can do anything you want it to.
Company's anthem so beautifully. It's a real joy. One of the great joys of being the musician here on the campus. Mm. And I know David Ball, our organist, feels the very same way. We just adore our Fred. As much as we're anticipating our Hazel,
oh, yeah,
we adore our Fred in about 500 ways, but especially the organ Fred.
Thank you.
Well, we're going to hear a little bit of the choir now. I still can't quite get over that they memorized every piece. I've got to go to the Christ Cathedral Choir and say, okay, slacker offers. We've got to get our act together here. We haven't memorized. But I have run into so many people in Orange County that say, oh, I sang with Fred at the Crystal Cathedral, and what a joy that was, and how much they loved it. But nobody said they had to memorize every song.
Yeah, that rule collapsed pretty soon after I left. When Don Newman came, he just they had a hard time finding somebody and had a hard time getting Don. And one of his edicts was the choir would no longer have to memorize. Mm. And so Mrs. Schuller bit the bullet, and that's the way it was. But it was fun to do.
Well, it was amazing. Let's listen to a piece. Fred, tell us what we're going to hear.
Well, actually, you're going to hear Peace of Mind from a recording that has a lot of my music on it. The only reason that I wrote so many pieces when I was here, all of which were published, was because they had to suit a certain time period, they had to be on a certain theme, and they all had to end the same, full organ sopranos on high C. So all of my music is somewhat similar in that way, but this is...
And you wrote a lot of these because there just weren't pieces that fit the themes?
This particular one is one that I wrote for Arvella Schuller's 60th birthday.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, Magnify the Lord.
All right, and here we are, Oh, Magnify the Lord by Fred Swan. We'll be right back. And we are back. This is John Romeri and Music from the Tower. And we have really probably the most special guest we're ever going to have on this show, Fred Swan. Fred was the organist here. He was in Riverside Church. He's given me all sorts of faces here. He's played the biggest organs anywhere in the world here at Crystal Cathedral. And after leaving Crystal Cathedral, he left and went to even a larger organ at First Congregational. Fred, what's left here for you? My goodness. Really more stops and more pipes in front of you than any organist in history.
Well, I've been very fortunate to play so many of the great organs of the world. People are always saying, what's your favorite? I couldn't possibly choose one, you know.
Yeah.
I have favorites in many countries, but I could never pick one. But, you know, until the cathedral was built and the Hazel Wright organ was put in, the First Congregational organ was the organ on the entire West Coast.
Right, exactly.
And people came from everywhere to play it and to hear it and so forth. Then this organ went in, and their nose got put a little bit out of joint.
I'm sure it did. And of course, it wasn't on TV.
Right.
You know.
So they immediately set out to make the organ bigger than the Crystal Cathedral organ. So they ended up making the largest church organ in the world. And then their organist became ill and was retiring. And they said, well, we got the organ. Now let's go get the other organist.
Oh, dear.
And they knew me because I'd played many recitals there over a 30, 40-year period. And I thought, well, you know, I've spent 16 plus years here, and I'm playing the organ less and less, and I'm getting near retirement. I really like to just play the organ again, concentrate on being an organist. So I went there to work with Thomas Somerville, a wonderful musician.
Who, yes, countrywide.
A great Bach scholar and a wonderful person. And I had a great time. I really enjoyed being there.
And you were there 3 years, 4 years?
Yes, a little over 3 years. I told him I was retiring on my 70th birthday.
How'd that go?
I retired exactly on my 70th birthday in 2001. In fact, most of the music department retired the same time I did.
Wow.
But I really enjoyed the time there with the great organs and the congregation that they loved that organ, and they sat motionless through a half-hour prelude every Sunday morning and post.
Wow.
So it was a great, fun thing to do.
Well, you mentioned to me earlier their favorite piece.
Amazingly, yes. When I made a recording, we put out a notice saying, of many things you've heard Fred play over the years, what would you like to hear on the recording? And the piece that got more votes than anything else was The Vision of the Church Eternal by Olivier Messiaen.
Well,
I mean, who would think that
as
Messiaen,
fabulous as that piece is, I almost fell on the floor when you told me that.
I played it All Saints, always on for the Festival of All Saints, and it just created such a mood in the building that it just captured people. So that's an unusual piece to record because it takes so much time to on a disc, but we did that.
Well, and with Catholics, they'd hear the first two chords and they'd be on their way to McDonald's in their car, you know. So we can't get big postludes or preludes like that, especially as crowded as our masses are now. Hopefully,
right,
when we move into the cathedral, we'll have a little bit more time for music between the services. But, and did you add to the organ while you were there? It was already gigantic.
It was already big, but we added a few more things. There were still some empty knobs. And there were people there that were so interested in the organ, so the two transept organs were put in and completely finished during my times there.
And named after?
Well, one of them is called the Fred Swan Gospel Organ.
Yes, you not only have played these giant organs, half of them are named after you.
No.
Where did I go wrong?
But it was wonderful to play there. I really enjoyed it.
Well, and just mastering that gigantic instrument every single Sunday, I can't imagine how much fun that was.
Yeah, it really was. Several weekday recitals every week throughout the year. Of course, in the equivalent here at Crystal Cathedral, we played Monday through Friday a half hour every day
for every single day.
Visitors for at least the first 10 years or so. Then we cut it back to 2 or 3 days.
Wow.
But First Congregational, even after all the years those organs were in, we still played twice a week and good crowds.
And good crowds for daily recitals. Yeah. Wow. Well, we're excited about Hazel coming back, and we're hoping to be able to feature the organ. We've been excited to have our Easter Carillon series with the folks coming out and bringing lunches. And
very successful.
Yeah, well, we've been very excited about just bringing that back, and it's going to be fun to have Hazel there and playing. So you went on to be the national president of the AGO. Some retirement, my friend. You retire as well as John Romero does, apparently.
You're still young. You have lots of time.
Oh, yeah. You have a six-year term. Nobody else has had that. You had a six-year term as the national president. You were on every other committee in the world.
Over the years, yes.
Including the finances of the Guild to try to pull that together. And we mentioned a little bit in the very first segment, but you've dedicated all these wonderful organs, especially organs in symphony halls. When Paul Jacobs was on a few weeks ago, we talked about organs in symphony halls and how that's become so much more exciting.
Oh, yes.
Beautiful instruments.
And the public recognize the organ now more than ever.
Yes, and tell us what it was like to dedicate Disney Hall.
Scaredy. Very scared.
thought those pipes were going to fall down on
I thought I was ready, but just before I went out on stage, I looked out and I saw thousands of people, every seat in the place
filled. Every seat.
And this console in the middle of the stage with a spotlight on it. And I thought, oh my goodness, I can't go out there. But somehow or other, I made it through. And the amazing thing was, I asked at one point how many of you have never been to an organ recital before? Stand up. And almost two-thirds of the people stood up.
That's the thing.
I thought, isn't this wonderful? And
it's the next step from the Virgil recitals all over the place. You know, that people are attracted to the organ because they're in these great symphony halls.
Davies Hall, Disney Hall, Sigerson Hall, Chicago Symphony Hall.
All of those places, I was privileged to play the organ in the Kimmel Center in Philadelphia.
Wonderful.
And we would do demos on a Saturday, and here's a couple hundred people coming to hear, tour the building, but coming specially because the organ played on Saturday.
Right.
You know, and they just loved hearing the colors. Even people that went to the symphony all the time, you know, heard a few big chords and a few rumbly pedals, but to hear the little oboe and the little cymbal stern and the little, you know, bird calls and all that stuff that these organs possess that you might not hear on a regular basis. But, and here in Costa Mesa, you also dedicated that organ.
Well, I can't say dedicated. I played what they called preview recitals. They wanted to present the organ to the public before it was officially inaugurated. And they asked me if I would play a Sunday afternoon, what they were calling preview recital, with all of the FIST people there. And you didn't have to pay, but you had to have a ticket. Well, they got so many requests that they filled the hall completely twice.
Oh, wow.
And that generated a lot of enthusiasm for that organ. So,
That organ is a magnificent.
A few months later, I made the first recording on the organ, and it's a really very fine organ.
It is, and it sounds beautiful in the hall, the way they can open those walls and give it more acoustic, and it's really a wonderful instrument. Well, can we zero in on those favorite moments? What were those favorite musical moments for Fred Swan? What were those moments that just stick out? I know what they are for John Romero, but I want to hear what they are for Fred Swan.
Well, I think we should hear yours. Goodness,
no.
I don't know how I could pick out. I've had so many wonderful experiences.
You've had a lot of mountaintops, my friend.
Really, just playing so many of the great organs around the world.
And you really have. I was with you on a trip. We went to Australia, remember?
Oh, my goodness.
And you played recitals there, but we also got to explore the organs of Town Hall and Sydney Opera House. And
I played both of those and also a couple down in Melbourne.
Yes, we didn't go with you.
Wonderful organs down there.
You played organs in Korea?
Korea. I played there two or three times, yes.
And wow.
The Passau Cathedral and Berlin Cathedral and so many of the European organs have just been wonderful, mainly because are playing in Franck's Church in Paris.
Yes.
Just the idea that you're going into a room where these people actually made music, where you could imagine them walking down this aisle
exactly.
And so forth.
I never
cease to be thrilled and impressed by the wonderful opportunities I've had to go places and do things.
And that's because of the organ. That little lady way back in Virginia who was letting you play if you had a good piano lesson. Well, this has been an absolute joy, and we could go on and on and on, as you hopefully can tell. There are so many more stories and so many more things to talk about. Fred, this has been an absolute joy, and I know our audience has absolutely loved it, and you've heard it here at Music from the Tower. And Fred's going to tell us our last piece that we're going to hear.
We're going to hear a fugue on the hymn tune St. Denio. Many congregations sing that to the words, "Immortal, invisible, God only wise." And this was written by the fine American organist and composer, who was actually John Romeri's teacher too, John Weaver. And the piece was commissioned by the Crystal Cathedral Choir as a going away present, retirement present for me.
Oh, how wonderful.
So it's an introduction and fugue on St. Denio, but we're only going to hear the fugue.
We're going to play the fugue. And you've been listening to Music from the Tower. This is John Romeri, your host. We've been enjoying an hour with Fred Swan, and we have many more shows to come. Please stay tuned. And in the meantime, until you come back next week, go out and enjoy a live performance of some great music. Thanks for listening.